topic for this morning, Parshas Ki Tetzé, Shiluach HaKan. As I put it on top of the sheet, the rational and the mystical. Source number one gives you the psukim that appear in our parsha about it. Ki Karei Kan Sipor Lefanecha. When a bird's nest happens before you on the road. Baderech, on the road. B'chol eitz, al aretz, tree, land, efrochim, o beitzim, birds or eggs. Va'em rovetes ala efrochim al habeitzim, and the mother is on, the young are on the eggs. Lo sikach va'em al habanim. Don't take the mother with the young. Shaleach teshalach es ha'em, send away the mother bird. Ve'et ha'banim tikach lach, take the young for yourself. Leman yitach lach ve'ha'arach ta'yamim. So it will be good for you, and you will have long life. Sounds like a nice, benign mitzvah. The way I learned it in school is it's a very humane mitzvah. Don't let her suffer, you know, she's going to see the young taken, she'll be upset. Send her away. Don't let her see when you take the young. Ah, but she's going to come back and there are no young there? It's a minor problem. But at least don't take them in front of her. And then you take a look at number two. This is a real live news story from this past May. It appeared in, as you see here, a website for a New Jersey radio station. I'm told it made it bigger than that. Yeah. Township police. Oh, sorry. Headline. Van keeps bringing kids to beat mother goose in Lakewood, woman says. Township police and the State Division of Fish and Wildlife are investigating reports that children were brought to a goose nest to beat and harass the birds on a daily basis, perhaps to steal the eggs. The incidents took place over the course of 5 days earlier this month near a retention pond on Cedar Bridge Avenue, according to a woman who says she saw the attacks and called police several times. The first time the attacks took place was about 2:15 p.m. May 13th, when the woman said she heard screaming outside her office. She said she, quote, saw a group of boys, maybe 10 of them, screaming and clapping and walking towards a goose who was flapping his wings and honking. Interrupt here. This is a bad idea having nothing to do with the mitzvah. If you know anything about geese, right? You know that? I'm shocked that like the kids survived this, that they didn't.
Yeah,
get
they're
that.
Very dangerous.
Geese are dangerous.
Yeah.
Yes, very, very much so. You don't mess with a goose, and certainly not if it's sitting on eggs.
It's a shiluach, not only with specific birds. It's got to be a kosher.
No, yeah, geese are kosher. Yeah. She said she wanted to scream at them to stop, this woman who's watching, but they could not hear me, so I went to get my phone, and they left. She said she didn't think anything of the incident at the time, thought maybe they were walking by the pond, maybe the goose was going after them, they were trying to make it get back. She saw a group of boys head to the pond the next day around the same time, and when she looked from her second floor office window, she saw, quote, a smaller group of boys swinging large sticks around at the goose. Again, by the time I got my phone out, they were leaving, and this... Yeah, and the story comes with a picture, and it's classic from family walking into to the van. Walking, it's unclear from the picture because it's a picture, you know, whether they're walking or running into this van. But it looks like they were caught in the act, and yeah, they're going back to their van now. And yeah, until I saw that, I never really thought about what Shiluach HaKan looks like to
okay, but that's
outsiders.
I actually performed the mitzvah.
Yeah.
It's nothing like that. It was actually in a subway station, and just very gently, I took it, me and my husband, and...
Yeah.
We have it every year on our house.
Yeah, you're not supposed to chase the mother away.
No, it's when she's
away. No, you wait till she's gone, and then you do something about...
Really? The pastor doesn't say wait, Helen.
No, you open the door, and my parents had it outside the front door.
It was not the door, she went away.
Okay.
Well, it wasn't eventually she's going to leave. Why do you have to shoo her away at all?
She's just away. If you happen to come and she's away, it's not part of the
right. But see, that doesn't make any sense.
And why is it a mitzvah?
What's the whole connection? I just like,
I was one of the main foundations of that question.
Why did I call it like a resource?
That you're chewing the mother with half of her head. That's the whole mitzvah.
Yeah. Why can't you just say
that so
until she's gone? Then
apparently, first of all, we're going to come back to this, I hope, by the end. But apparently this family is in the camp that believes that you're supposed to go after this opportunity even when you don't want the eggs. Because as the story plays out, and if you look it up online, you'll get all the details, they actually left the eggs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pick them up and you put them back.
No.
Yeah, and you're supposed to break the gloves because then another bird will come back. Because if you touch it.
Right. They told us that about salamanders when I was in summer camp. I think
also,
they didn't want to
if you want someone else to be able to pull the mitzvah, you put the eggs back so that the next person can do it. Yes, exactly. Then the mother bird will come back.
Yeah, she'll come back.
Yeah.
Got it.
That's
like it's a recycled mitzvah.
Yeah. When people as long as you don't give us like a katan or something, because there's like some sort of, I don't know.
Something. Yeah.
Something. You, 100 people came to their door and do it.
That's wonderful for the bird. So what I want to talk about is the question of, first of all, is this mitzvah related to having mercy on the mother bird at all? It certainly doesn't sound like it in this story. Is it okay to skip it if you actually aren't interested in taking the young? And why does this mitzvah earn long life, as promised here in the source? So, first, this issue of mercy. The Rambam makes it sound like it's indeed about mercy. Take a look at source number 3, my translation of the Rambam's Mor Nevuchim on this. He says, this is also the reason in Shiluach HaKant, generally the eggs upon which the mother has already sat and the chicks which are young enough to need their mother are not suitable for consumption. And when one sends away the mother and it flies alone, it is not pained by the sight of someone taking her young. Also, this requirement may cause the person to abandon the whole enterprise, since that which he would take is usually not fit for consumption. The way the Rambam understands it is that the goal is to get you not to take the young in the first place. By requiring you to send away the mother bird, number one, if you do take the young, this is supposed to be merciful. And number two, you'll say, it's not worth it. Now, you may have these very timid birds around that you're able to just scare away by opening the door and that's it. But certainly in the Gemara, they talk about birds that are a lot harder to get rid of. And they say, shalach, shalach, you shall send multiple times, you have to work at it. And, you know, the goose, again, in number two, mother goose apparently, it is not so easy to scare. The Rambam's idea is actually hard to do, and the goal ultimately is, again, either spare her emotional pain, or alternatively, get you to drop the whole enterprise and just leave the young there.
Not to do the mitzvah.
Not to take the young, and therefore the mitzvah is not relevant. In other words, the Rambam's view, which is the majority view, although we'll see those who disagree, but the Rambam's view is you only do this mitzvah if you want the young. You don't just go scare away mother birds for, you know, in order to check off a box on the list of mitzvahs.
It's the day and age, is that what people think? It's like people are so excited with this mitzvah.
Yeah, I know. I can't answer what other people think.
Okay.
Sorry.
No one I know is excited about this.
I feel like
people are so excited with this mitzvah. Like, if they find it near their house, like,
yeah, no, that's
year.
That's true. I've gotten emails about, look, birds nest here, whatever. Everybody go.
There's a guy who wrote a book on Shiluach HaKant, like, people call him, he's like this guru, like, yeah.
Yeah, I believe that. I absolutely believe it. Let's go back, though, because there's good reason to think it's actually not about mercy. Take a look at source number 4. Mishnah and Gemara and Brachos.
Hold on 1 second, I have another thing on this.
Yes. Yeah.
If it is about mercy, like, just, and the Rambam doesn't, and the Torah doesn't want you to do it, according to the Rambam, then just skip the pasuk. Like, what?
Well, except that the Rambam is telling you no. It's telling you, what do you mean, according to those who disagree? It's like, not about mercy.
No, according to the Rambam, who's saying, like, the whole reason that we're telling you that you've got to send away the mother is so that you'll abandon the whole idea because the eggs are not worthwhile. So, like, don't write this pasuk. Don't tell us about this mitzvah, like, if you don't really want us to do this.
But that's not, no. The way the Rambam frames it is, number one, this way, if you are taking the young, you will chase away the mother bird, and he says there's mercy in that.
If you want the eggs, you'll do it the right way.
Exactly. Because people want eggs. Right? At the end of the day, people raise chickens because they want the eggs. And then number two, hopefully, if you don't really need them, you won't take them because it's a hassle. Because you have to go chase away the mother bird. That's the way the Rambam frames it. He actually talks more, I didn't bring the whole piece, but he talks more about the emotions of the mother bird and how it's like the emotions of a human mother and, like, yeah, whole thing. You know.
Wait, I have a
sorry.
This may be, I'm so sorry, I'm interrupting. How do we eat eggs?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Chickens.
I prefer medium boiled.
I imagine that they're not like chewing away all.
Those are ovens.
No, that's hen.
Right.
But it's the same fundamental principle.
Right. So one of the interesting elements of this, and we're going to come back to it later, is that it doesn't apply in all situations. And we'll come back to some of it, not that case in particular, but when we do, remind me of your question. It'll be when we get to...
It can't be about mercy if you own a bird.
Number 13, source 13 is where we'll get back to it. Dina was going to ask.
The fundamental principle is that a mother bird has certain emotions and you're being merciful, then it shouldn't matter if it's owned or free or whatever.
Okay. Right. So we're going to come back to it, really, assuming we get there. Dina.
I was just like thinking about how this mitzvah, so you don't want to take like further to extend to that, but yet the mitzvah, like kashrus, we do. It's the same thing. Like, don't eat the mother with the baby, and take it to mean like the whole temple is kashrus.
So actually, some of the mafarshim here link the two, osav yesbino, and this, to say that it's the same operating principle of mercy that's at work here is also at work there. Some connect them in a different way, and they say it's actually an environmentalist mitzvah. And the idea is that if you take the mother and the young, you wipe out the line. So this way, you make sure that you'll leave something around. It's actually environmentalist, and so to hear. Don't take the mother. Chase away the mother bird, and therefore there will be an ability for future young people.
Right. Both of them are like the mercy. I mean, that way I see it. But I'm saying one of them, explain it way further and take like the whole like you can't do milk and meat together and this whole thing. And the other one is just like.
Well, I don't know if we associate that with milk and meat. I mean, some take.
Los
Vashal Gadim with Levimo, yeah.
This is where we get milk and meat from.
Yeah.
So I'm saying that when we look into like we don't just not eat the goat and the like, it's like together.
Right, we take it so much further.
Take it so much further.
Yeah.
But the bird, the thing, we're just like if you see a bird, maybe.
What would you build around it?
I don't know. I'm just wondering.
Okay, well, let me know. We'll have a Nidra Banan. Look, people are eager for that, so.
What do you say, like, you should be calling and see everyone's
favorite? So take a look at number 4, please. Mishnah says, talking about a chazan, Ha'omer al-kan sipor yagiyu rachamecha. Chazan gets up there. This goes back to the time of the Mishnah when the text for davening was a little more flexible. So you get a chazan who decides he's going to add something. And he says, Hashem, your mercy reaches the nest of the birds. So too, have mercy on us. Mishakin oso. So the Mishnah says he silenced such a chazan. Gemara asks why. Pligi batrei amoraim b'marav. Two amoraim in the west, which means Israel, debated this point. Rabbi Yossi bar Avin and Rabbi Yossi bar Zvita. Chad amar b'nishem matel kina b'maseh bereishis. One said, it's because you create jealousy among the deeds of creation. Meaning, we only have this mitzvah for mother birds. There's no such mitzvah for, let's say, the cow. Right? We take the cow. So you seem to be suggesting that God has special mercy for birds. Birds are somehow special. It can end up with some kind of like quasi-idolatrous cult built around the holy bird that God is so concerned for. And then the second approach, because you make Hashem's attributes into mercy and they are really only decrees. Stop trying to read this as mercy. Taking this read of the Gemara, because there are different ways you can take it, the Gemara is saying, the reason you send away the mother bird is the same as, exactly, what, just like you have para aduma, or just like you have don't wear chatneys.
Stop trying to, like, figure out.
Don't mind, read God.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not about mercy at all. It's simply, this is what you do. Supporting that, a classic medrash in source number 5. We quoted this medrash tangentially in one of the shirim last year when we talked about Lot's daughters. And we talked about committing an avera lishma and that whole topic. So Rav Amar lo nitnu hamitzvos elitzareif bahenes habrios. Rav says the mitzvos were given only to be mitzareif Hashem's creations. The word litzareif is a hard word to translate. I rendered it smelt there. The point is a refining process where you expose metal to extreme heat, and it's part of a refining process. So that's what mitzvos are for. Sorry?
You were talking about smelting on Shabbos.
Okay. Looking at you, but slay like a chronicle of Misha showed him that it's not So the Medrash asks, why would Hashem care if you sheft an animal from the front of the neck, or Misha showed him in an orif, or if you sheft from the back of the animal's neck? The answer is, front of the neck, back of the neck doesn't make any difference in the cosmic scheme of things. Rather, Hashem said, I want you to do it this way.
Not because it's more merciful.
No,
like we've all.
It's just discipline.
Just a degree.
Discipline. You're doing what God told you to do. That's what has value. So now I have a problem. Because on the one hand, I have the Rambam telling me that this is about mercy. And on the other hand, I have a Mishnah and Gemara saying, stop that. It's not about mercy. It's a gezerah. Right? It's supported by this Medrash that says that's the way to view all mitzvos. So how do we take this? So three schools of thought. One school of thought is the school of thought of the Kuzari. And the Kuzari says, he says, all mitzvahs have a purpose and every detail of a mitzvah matters. And therefore, there must be a practical benefit to Shiluach HaKein. Practical doesn't have to mean practical like it's for you. Practical can mean on a mystical level, whatever's going up and going on in higher realms. But take a look at source number 6 when he says, "Ve'ein b'avodas hakel sivara v'lo hakasha v'lo hischakmus." He says, serving Hashem doesn't involve coming up with logical explanations, doesn't involve making analogies or inferences, doesn't involve calculations. Ve'ilu hayakein, if that were really the way we're supposed to approach Torah, the philosophers who are so smart would come up with double what we've come up with in terms of understanding the Torah. He says, you can't know why, you can't know what the benefits are. So he says, there is a benefit, but it's not for you to figure it out. So that when he could accept the idea that there's mercy involved, but he can't accept as you trying to mind read God about it. That's one school of thought. It may be about mercy, but you won't know it. Second school of thought is what we saw in the Rambam, which is, no, of course it's about mercy. Absolutely. And Rav Shimshon Rafal Hirsch supports the idea that it's about mercy as well in source number 7 from his work Chorev. He says, as for man, whose function it is to show respect and love for God's universe and all its creatures, his heart has been created so tender that it feels with the whole organic world, bestowing sympathy even on beings devoid of feeling, mourning even for fading flowers, so that if nothing else, the very nature of his heart must teach him that he is required above everything to feel himself the brother of all things, of all beings, and to recognize the claim of all beings to his love and beneficence. He says, human beings are created to be sensitive. And that's part of it, is that it teaches us this feeling towards others. Then what are you going to do about the Mishnah and Brachos? So that's all well and good, but what happens to the Mishnah and Brachos?
I have a question with the Kuzari. Aren't we taught that we're supposed to, even if we know that we're really just doing it because it's a decree, we're taught that we are supposed to try to delve into the Tamei HaMitzvos and stuff like that.
The Kuzari doesn't think you are. The Kuzari says
that. That whole concept. He's like,
he's against it.
Just do everything that's the hardcore past, and just do it. Don't think.
Correct.
That's losing a lot of...
There were people, Rishonim, who opposed the Rambam on those grounds. Because the Rambam went into Tamei HaMitzvos, they said the whole, whatever the Rambam says is true. Yeah, because he investigated Tamei HaMitzvos.
I mean, there is a concept of reform and conservative and all those people saying, if you investigate so much into the Tamei and then you decide that something's not merciful.
So we're going to get there. Number 10, we'll get there. Right. Yep. But the Rambam's view is that it is about mercy. Then what are you going to do with the Mishnah and Brachos? So I didn't bring it on the sheet, but the Rambam in that section in Mor Nebuchim that we saw before in number 3, further along in it, says, that doesn't bother me at all. The answer is, you follow the other view of the Gemara. The view that said the reason why we silence the Chazan is not because these are decrees. We silence the Chazan because he makes it look like God cares about birds and birds are somehow special to God. What are you going to do with the source that says all of the mitzvos are letzareif b'henes habrios, to toughen you up, to refine you? So take a look at number 8. When you see the Rambam's explanation, He says, anyone with a complete view of this subject, meaning the reasons for mitzvos, must believe the following. Each general mitzvah must have a cause. It is commanded for a particular benefit. However, its components are just commands. For example, regarding killing a living thing for good food, the benefit is, as we will clarify, the benefit to having a shechita specifically is something he'll discuss, but the fact that it is performed via shechita rather than nechira, that the way you slaughter is in a particular way, slicing the front of the neck and so on, and severing the esophagus and windpipe in a particular spot, these and similar actions are to smelt the creations. In other words, what the Rambam believes is that mitzvos have a general benefit associated with them, but all the specific details of how you do the mitzvah, that is just to have you follow Hashem's rules. That's all it's about. What's the value in having something that's just to follow Hashem's rules? Controlling yourself, demonstrating emunah, demonstrating love of Hashem. The fact that before I'm going to act, I think, what does Hashem want me to do? Right? It doesn't matter what the specifics of it are. I think I must have told you the story once. The kid who I talked to, the 13-year-old boy about kashrus and cows and pigs. I tell the story? I must have told the story here at some point, but no one remembers, so I'm okay. I'll tell it again. It's a great story. When I was at YU, so I was an advisor for junior NCSY, like 7th and 8th grade. Sorry, grade 7, grade 8. I get confused from time to time. And it was basically a public school area. These are kids who didn't go to yeshiva at all. And there was a kid there who asked me on Friday night, if God made cows and God made pigs, why are we allowed to eat the cow? We're not allowed to eat the pig. Fine question. So since he was a 13-year-old boy, I asked him, did he have a girlfriend? And he, of course, said yes, because 13-year-old boy, he wasn't going to say no. Whether he did or did not, I never found out. But I asked him, imagine that you were walking along with her, and suddenly she said to you, Brian, because his name was Brian, Brian, do you care about me? I said, well, you know, she asked you that question, what would you say? Yes. Okay. She asks you the following. Brian, if you really care about me, give me $100. I said, never mind whether you would give her the $100. Would you understand why she's asking? He says, yes, because she wants $100. Good. Now, you're walking with her, and again, she asks you, do you care? And you say yes. And then she says, you see that pond over there? If you really care about me, run around the pond. So leave aside whether you would or would not do it. Would you understand why she's asking? He said, yes. Why is she asking? Because she wants me to demonstrate that I care. That's really the key point, is the demonstration that you care. That's what the Rambam is trying to tell you here, is that you need to heave on to that idea. I keep Googling him, wanting to figure out if he's, you know, whatever, done anything with that story. Haven't found him yet. The point that the Rambam is trying to make here is mitzvos may have overall messages. And that's what he says regarding sending away the mother bird. But the specifics of a mitzvah, that's just in order to run around the pond, to demonstrate that Hashem is significant to you, and therefore you're going to do what Hashem has asked of you. Clear? Okay. So that's your second approach. First approach, the Kuzari approach, there may be benefits, but you can't read God's mind. Second approach, the Rambam, the general point is indeed mercy. And the fact that the Mishnah says, you silence the Chazan, is because he's suggesting divine favoritism, and the fact that we say mitzvahs are decrees is talking about the specifics of mitzvahs, not the general. Ramban has a third approach. He sides with the Rambam, but it's not about mind reading God. And we'll see it in source number 9 here, but I want to say it outside first. There's a difference between saying Hashem is merciful on the birds and therefore he wants them to be spared, and saying Hashem wants us to learn the trait of mercy. It's not about God. It's about what we are supposed to learn. And so the benefit here is when we chase away the mother bird, hopefully not the sticks, and hopefully not, you know, in a case like in Lakewood, then we will develop mercy because it's going to force us into that level of sensitivity. Take a look at source number 9, please, Ramban. He says, "Elu ha-hagadot asher niskashu al harab kfi da'ati inyan acher lahem." He says, those agadot, meaning what we saw in the Gemara from Brachos, as well as the Medrash, that people use to challenge the master, meaning the Rambam, he says, I think they mean something else. Shiratsu lomar, they mean to say, she'ena to'elet b'mitzvos l'kadosh baruch hu ba'atzmo yis'ala. The benefit of mitzvos is not to God. Avala to'elet ba'adam atzmo. The point is the person. To keep him from being harmed, to keep him from having a bad belief, to keep him from developing an ugly trait, to call to mind Hashem's wonders, to ladas Hashem, to know God. That's what it means, but sarei. The point is to refine us in the course of doing the mitzvos. And he says, that's the point about shechting from the neck. He says, it's for our benefit and not for Hashem's benefit. That's the refining that goes on, is from the lessons we learn. And therefore, he says in the last paragraph of number 9, when it says that the mitzvahs are really just decrees, means Hashem doesn't have mercy in particular on the bird's nest. To go back to the case that Dina mentioned, it's not about Hashem saying, I am merciful and therefore don't take the mother and the young. Go back to the question that was asked in the beginning, why don't we just not eat eggs? He says, if Hashem really felt so bad for animals, then he wouldn't have allowed us to use them. Shimkein haya osir shchita. He would have said, forget it. No, there's no such thing as shchita. You're not allowed to eat meat. Now, of course, we start out as vegetarian. Keep that in mind. He says, the point is for us to learn mercy and not to be cruel. Because it's easy for cruelty to spread for a human being. So the goal is to improve us. It doesn't say anything about Hashem. It says something about us. Okay, three different schools of thought. A, it's not about mercy and stop trying to mind read God. There may be a point, but it's not for you. That's the Kuzari. Or there is a point, but it's not for you. That's the Kuzari. Second view, it's about mercy. Absolutely. That's the Rambam's take. And the point of saying that mitzvahs are decrees is about the details of mitzvahs, not the general ones. Or Ramban, which is shading of the Rambam, is we are supposed to learn mercy. It's not about Hashem. Now, Dasi asked a question about the potential for these reasons for mitzvos leading people to say, okay, then some mitzvos I agree with, and some mitzvos I think are out of date, don't apply anymore. Do you go there? And the truth is that debate actually appears in the Gemara, in a sense. Take a look at source number 10, Gemara Bava Metzia. The Gemara starts out by talking about a mitzvah which is framed in the Torah as Velo Sachavol Beged Almana. And what it means is that in the event that you lend money to a widow and you want to take collateral, you're not allowed to take her clothing as collateral. And really the point is that if you take something from her that she needs, she is going to have to come over to the house regularly to get the collateral back for her use. And it's going to start trouble in the community. She's coming over to the house. People are, unfortunately, want to gossip. And therefore, don't take the collateral is sort of the lesson that's learned. Well, the halacha is framed in the Torah is simple. Don't take her clothing as collateral. That's it. The idea behind it, the tam hamitzvah that is applied, is because if you do, it's going to lead to gossip when she keeps coming back to get it back for her own use. Which leads to the obvious question. Yeah?
If people are not going to gossip, then is this...
Oh, that wasn't the obvious question to me. If people aren't going to gossip, good luck. You take something she isn't going to need. You take something else. You take, like, she has some kind of an heirloom vase or something that that you can hold. But the question is, what if she doesn't need the clothing? What if she is, you know, she needs the loan for investment purposes. She, you know, her husband passed away, left her a farm, and she needs to be able to hire people to work and whatever it is. But she's well enough off that she doesn't need every last article of clothing. So she could give you something and use that as collateral.
Right.
Is there any problem taking it? That's the Gemara here. Tana Rabbanan. Brisa number one. Two lessons that we're going to see. Here's the first one. Almana, a widow. Bein shi aniya, bein shi ashira, ein mamashin nosa divra Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says it doesn't matter whether she's wealthy or not. The Torah says don't take the clothing as collateral. That's it. Beginning, middle, and end. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Rabbi Shimon says no. Ashira mamashkin enosa. If she's wealthy, you can take it. Aniya ein mamashkin enosa. But if she's indigent, then don't take it. Shata chayav lachzir lava tamasiya shem rabbi shchein osa. Because you're going to have to give it back to her and it's going to give her a bad name. So Rabbi Yehuda says, law doesn't change. Rabbi Shimon sounds like the law does change. So the Gemara asks, Lameimra, are you trying to tell me that Rabbi Yehuda does not analyze the reason for the pasuk and say, well, it's because you give her a bad name and therefore it doesn't apply? Rabbi Yehuda is not interested in reasons for mitzvahs. And Rabbi Shimon is interested in reasons for mitzvahs? Is that the way to frame it? We have a problem. Because I have another source which seems to indicate differently. And this is the classic example that people are more familiar with. Shlomo and his wives. Right? The Torah says regarding a king, it was last week's parsha, he shall not have too many wives. Anyone know what the number is? Too many? Right. He's allowed to have up to 18 wives, learned from David HaMelech. Because David HaMelech, when you count up the wives and the concubines, you end up with 18. Apparently, 18 you can deal with, 19 is just a little too much. Anything I say on this is going to be on the recording, so I'm just going to leave it where it is. But anything you say is going to be on the recording also. So the Gemara says regarding this, the pasuk says, "Velo yar velo nashim." He shouldn't have too many wives. And there, the Torah says he shouldn't have too many wives, lest his heart be led astray. Which, in fact, is what we find. Yeah, it's what we find with Shlomo, because Shlomo engages in all the political marriages. He marries women from all these different nations, and the pasuk actually says they led him astray. And there's Avodah Zarah and everything else that results. So the Gemara says, I have a brisa here, this is our second lesson, which it says, don't have too many wives. And Rabbi Yehuda says, he's allowed to have as many as he wants as long as they don't lead him astray. So Rabbi Yehuda seems to say the reason matters. And Rabbi Shimon says, no, even if one of them is going to lead him astray, you can't have one. Then why does it say you shouldn't have too many, even if they are beautifully, beautifully righteous like Abigail? So now I don't understand. Now they're both on the side of using the reason, right? Rabbi Yehuda is on the side of using the reason, and he says that he can have as many as he wants as long as they don't lead him astray. And Rabbi Shimon is using the reason to say, really, what matters is the reason, and therefore, don't marry women who are going to lead you astray. You're the king; you have responsibilities.
One reason is written in Torah.
The widow one is not.
No, the reason here is written, and by Shulach HaKan, for example, is not written.
But leaving that aside, Shulach HaKan, going to this Gemara, as Dina says, the widow one is not mentioned in the Torah.
The reason. Yeah. You extracted it the reason.
Correct. So the Gemara says, that's it. Rabbi Yehuda says, I don't analyze psukim in order to figure out what the logic is and then go applying that. Kings are a different story because the Torah gives you the reason explicitly. If the Torah gives you a reason, then there's room to say, well, here it applies and here it doesn't apply. That's Rabbi Yehuda's logic. Whereas Rabbi Shimon says, no. He says, we always analyze the pasuk for the reason. And therefore, the Torah didn't even need to give me the reason here. Why did the Torah actually go to the trouble of spelling out, don't lead him astray? And it must be that it's trying to teach me that this rule of don't have too many is meant to be limited by the reason. In other words, the reason is being stated because it's actually part of the law. Even though we said don't have too many, which makes you think 18, the truth of the matter is it's not about the quota. It's about not being led astray, and even one could do so. So Rabbi Yehuda, in our conclusion of this, says, ignore the reasons unless the Torah provides them. The Torah gives you a reason, then it's something to work with. Rabbi Shimon says, analyze the reasons, and those will help define the mitzvah in practice. And if reasons are given, that will actually add additional laws.
Do most mitzvahs give reasons, with the exception of a chuk?
Most mitzvahs do not give reasons. I think that's a safe statement. So why is Rabbi Yehuda so opposed to finding reasons? So it could be like the Kuzari said, because you're not God, you can't know what it is that Hashem had in mind. Also could be because, as we said before, it's simply a decree. That's it. There isn't. Yeah, maybe Rabbi Yehuda believes there are no reasons. If you flip the page, number 11, right? I bring this as an example. We have Rosh Hashanah coming up. Rabbi Yitzchak asks the question, Lama token b'Rosh Hashanah? Why do we blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah? To which the Gemara says, I don't know. What do you mean, Lama token? Why don't you blow the shofar? The Torah says, blow shofar.
Yeah.
Like, why is that even a question? And then it goes on to explain. No, he was asking a different question. He was asking, why do we blow in the before Mosaf, and we blow again during Mosaf? But the point, then, the reason I quote this is, the Gemara says, what do you mean, why do you blow shofar? You blow shofar because Hashem said to. Forget all your fancy reasons for, you know, waking people up. So we actually paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, which is to say we don't change a mitzvah based on the reason that we see. We may find reasons. Rambam can give us lessons. Ramban can say it's meant to teach me whatever. But we don't change a mitzvah based on the reason. I brought you this passage in number 12 to illustrate it from Shimshon Fal Hirsch and his introduction to Chorev. This always shocks people, which is why I bring it. He says, there will accordingly be two schools of study engaged in the exposition of the divine law, differing only in the sources from which they draw their knowledge of it. One school will concern itself with the comprehension of the utterances regarding our practical conduct in and for themselves, and of the lessons equally concerned with practice which can be derived from those utterances. In other words, just to turn that from the English translated from the German into English translated from the English, what he's saying is that there are two different areas of study. One area of study is halacha. What does the Torah say about what I'm supposed to do? And what do I derive from that? What are my laws? The other school will concern itself with reflecting and pondering on these laws, and its source of knowledge will be the more or less illuminating power of insight which dwells in each individual religious thinker. He says, the other is to say, what are the Torah's laws, and what lessons can I learn from them? What ideas can I draw from them? He calls the first category Shmaitza. Shmaitza is halacha, basically. Whereas the second category he calls Agada, or Agadata, as some were willing to call it. The first one is law, the second one is lessons from the law. And what he writes is, everything belonging to the first school is obligatory, because it emanates from the authority which has power to bind. All that springs from the second school has no power to bind, because it represents only the views of individuals, and claim recognition only insofar as it is in conformity with what is contained in the work of the first school. And I didn't actually bring the most shocking part on here, I should have. But what he says is, the first one, the halacha, that's binding. The lessons you learn from it are not. And therefore, he says, when it comes to the second school, you can make up whatever you want. He says, in any generation, anyone is free to look at the halacha and to say, here's a lesson that I draw from it. Here's something I can draw, as long as he writes here at the end, it doesn't contravene the halacha itself. As long as you're in conformity with the halacha, you can come up with your own ideas in any generation at any time about what we're supposed to learn from it. There's a lot of room.
You don't come out for doing a mitzvah, like you could come up with whatever things help you perform that mitzvah.
Yeah, but lessons that you learn from it.
Yeah.
Because I would have thought actually the clothing collateral thing is not the gossip thing. I would have been like, it's like she's a widow. Like, but don't take her laughing or clothing off.
Mercy.
Right.
Maybe the reason why we don't go that route with it is because we have a separate mitzvah of not taking that sort of collateral from a pauper. In other words, generally when someone is needy, you're not allowed to take that which he needs on a regular basis. So it could be they're looking for something that will explain widow specifically. But code number 13 now, and this will take us back to Hadassah's question. Rabbi Chiyo Michalevsky in the Aruch HaShulchan says, the Gamein Lishol, he says, don't ask. He says, if there's no obligation to take the young, in other words, if this mitzvah really applies, whether you want the young or not, then why is it that the mitzvah doesn't apply to a non-kosher bird? It only applies to kosher ones. I don't understand. It should apply to non-kosher birds also, since you're not taking the young, and you're saying that the mitzvah still applies when you're not taking it. He says, if someone's going to ask that, ain't this she'ela klal? He says, that's not a question. Da'atu tamei ha'Torah gluyim lanu? Are the reasons of the Torah revealed to us? Har gzeras melachi, it's a decree of the king. Hadgam shemefarshei ha'Torah nasnu eizet ha'amin. Granted that commentators gave reasons, zilas bore bi'alma, that's just not an offer, some kind of logical explanation. Aval be'emes, but in truth, na'u magaloseha lo seda. You don't know the paths in which the Torah wanders. In other words, what the Aruch HaShulchan is saying is, your reasons that you give are not going to line up perfectly with the mitzvah. You will find aspects of the mitzvah that don't seem to fit. Even if we're saying that we're supposed to learn mercy from it, you have to recognize that ultimately Hashem's path in this mitzvah is more complicated than just us giving some simple explanation, and that will lead to those unique details. And that's the logic to me in Rabbi Yehuda saying, therefore don't change the mitzvah based on what you see. So what we've said so far, before we get to the next part of this, what we've said is that it seems to be mercy associated, but there's good reason to think not, that Mishnah and Brachos about the Chazan, silencing the Chazan, as well as the Medrash about Mitzvahs being to refine the creatures, doesn't sound like it's about the lessons that you learn. We gave three different views. One view is you can't know what the details mean, or what the mitzvah means. There is meaning, but you can't know it. Second approach is no. It teaches us, in fact, lessons that we can learn, and that's the Rambam's take. And then Ramban, who refines the Rambam and says what it means in terms of lessons you can take, it means lessons for yourself, not lessons about God. What you can learn are the lessons Hashem wants you to take away. The Gemara in Bava Metzia has a debate about the way we take these lessons that we learn, and Rabbi Shimon seems to be more flexible with analyzing reasons, giving reasons. Rabbi Yehuda less so. He says, ignore the reasons unless the Torah gives them to you. And his opposition is perhaps because he believes mitzvahs are just decrees and that's all there is to it. That could be why. Or because he believes you can't know Hashem's mind like the Kuzari. Or simply because he says you don't change mitzvahs based on part of the Kuzari idea. You can't know the mind of God. Rabbi Yehuda's view is, therefore, we don't change a mitzvah based on the reasons that we see. You can come up with, as Rosh Hashanah Falhurst says, any explanation you want that is consistent with halacha. Anything that you can come up with that explains why the Torah says what it does, go for it. But don't try to shape the mitzvah based on the reason. So when you look at Shiloh HaKan and you say, well, it doesn't seem very merciful, look what happened in Lakewood. The answer is, the mitzvah can still be to teach me mercy. And yet, what they do could theoretically
feel unmerciful.
Yeah, feel unmerciful. No, that part can feel unmerciful, but can theoretically be consistent with the mitzvah. The next part of it is the part of, well, is it really consistent in the mitzvah? What if you don't actually want the young and you're just going looking for trouble? So here, we get to Ramban's Kabbalistic side. Logically, if the point of the mitzvah is to learn mercy, then you shouldn't go after the young just in order to chase the mother bird, right? If I don't want the eggs, then why would I do that? And in fact, that's the Chasam Sofer's psak. Chasam Sofer in Or HaChaim Siman Kuf says, if you don't want the young, there is absolutely no obligation to do the mitzvah, and more than that, he says, it's against Rachmim, it's against mercy. The Chazon Ish paskin that way as well, in Yeradeya Kufayin Hei. However, not everybody agrees. Chazon Ish would have probably eaten the eggs. What do you mean? He wasn't a vegan.
I know, the Chazon Ish lives in a time where, like us, we get eggs from the grocery store.
The Chazon Ish lives first in Europe and then in early Israel, right? He passed away in the 1950s. People had chickens and got their eggs. Yeah, that's what they did. I mean, he lived in B'nai Brak, but it wasn't like built up B'nai Brak of today. there's another school of thought which turns the whole mitzvah on its head. And Ramban quotes it at the end of his comments in source number 14, and I didn't translate it. It really defies good translation. Take a look. He quotes you the Medrash Rabbi Nechunya ben Hakana regarding Shiluah Hakan, and he says, this involves sod, a secret. Amar Rabbi Rachmoy, Mai tichsiv shalach teshalach es ha'im v'lo amar es ha'av. What does it mean when the Pasuk says, send away the mother? And it doesn't say send away the father. Ella, shalach teshalach es ha'im b'chvod osa bina shenikreis eim ha'olam. He says, send away the mother into the honor of bina, which is called the mother of the world. And he quotes you a pasuk, ki ein lebina tikra. It's about bina, understanding, which is associated with the mother. And what is ve'as habanim tikach lach? Take the sons for yourself. Amar Rabbi Rachmoy, osam banim shegidla. That means the sons were raised by bina. And what are they? Shiva simei hasukkah, v'dinei shiva simei hashavua, the seven days of sukkahs, the laws of the 7 days of the week. V'hinei ha-mitzvah zos romezes le'inyan gadol. And this mitzvah, he says, hints at the great matter, and therefore the reward is great, so that you shall have a long life. What in the world are you talking about? What was that? Send away bina, but take the product of bina? So if you understand this, don't explain it to any of us, because this is Kabbalah. However, look at what the Aruch HaShulchan writes. And I brought you him as a summary of it, but you can find more in other sources. But he says, the ode, he's dealing with the question of whether you go after the mother bird when you don't want the eggs. He says, L'fi tameh ha-chochma sh'nemru b'mitzvah zu b'perish ha-ramban v'chayeh u'b'yoser v'zor v'tikunim. He says, according to the various explanations of higher wisdom that are found in the Ramban, Rabbeinu b'chayeh, Zohar, and so on, b'dafku likachas ha-banim. It is specifically instructed that we take the young, and the reason why, and this is going to upset you, but you're warned, is because you want the mother bird to cry out when you chase her away and she comes back and the young are not there, in order to awaken Hashem's mercy on us. In other words, far from being mercy on the mother bird, it's actually upset the mother bird, in order that the tefillah, so to speak, of the mother bird should awaken Hashem's mercy for us. So go get the mother bird, chase away the mother bird, and take away the young.
So she's going to cry on our behalf.
Yes.
I don't know.
So that's why it's Aruchas Yamin.
So yes, I'm going to come back to Aruchas Yamin if we have a minute at the end. But yes, we're at the end. So we'll see.
It's reminiscent of like a korban.
Yes, actually. It does. It sounds quasi-corbanic, if that's a word.
We can add it to our list.
Yeah. Corbanic and married. There we go. That's another one.
Is it like the regular chickens? I didn't know that. That was just birds in a nest.
So there is discussion, which I didn't want to go into at all. But there is discussion about, the Torah says, ki yikare, when it happens before you. Therefore, not one that you have there, like you have your bird nest in your chicken coop. But I don't want to go into practical right now, because I haven't reviewed Shalach HaKain in a long time, and I don't want to say something incorrect. But I did want to, having shown you this other view of the mitzvah, which, you know, gives a very different way to look at the whole thing.
Yeah, totally.
Barbaric.
It's not. I don't think it's that extreme.
Well, no. I mean, ask yourself the question. I am willing to shecht in order to get food, right? I am willing to take eggs in order to get food. Am I willing to cause this bird whatever pain the bird is feeling, because it doesn't have the young, not for the sake of my benefit of eating lunch, but for the sake of having Hashem's mercy awaken? The only difference that I see between the two benefits is that it's easy to see that we are fed, and therefore we feel full, and okay, I get that.
She's crying.
She's
crying regardless. Whether we're eating the eggs or we're doing it to make her cry, she's still crying.
Correct. But the question really is, do you accept the idea that this has any impact on Hashem's mercy? Like, does that make any...
Well, the shofar is to evoke Hashem's mercy, so instead we're making her cry? It's the same thing.
is that the goal of blowing shofar? I thought we just blow shofar because Hashem said to.
Well, this time we
can. Yes.
Right. This isn't an easy thing to work with. You have to realize that.
I would have thought then that from this whole story that maybe it should be like a segula, not a segula, but like a bracha to have children, because like she's crying for her children, so.
Mm-hmm. Right. I don't know. This is something to think about. This isn't something to come away with like, oh, okay, I'm fine now. Like, hopefully you're disturbed by this, and hopefully it gives people cause to think a little bit. The Torah also says, as we saw in the beginning, that you get long life for it. There are actually four cases in the Torah of reward for long life. Kibbutz Avayim is the famous one. What others? Sending away the mother bird. Good. That's two. Maintaining honest weights and measures, also in this week's parasha. And observing all the mitzvahs, which is kind of cheating, but Moshe said it a bunch of times, actually. And he said it in Parshas Veschanan, he said it again in Parshas Ekev, and it comes up again in Hazinu, the end of the Hazinu.
Weights and measures?
Honest weights and measures, that you don't cheat people in business by using a weight that's not complete,
okay.
Right? That's too heavy or too light. So the Torah says that, practically speaking, if you're in business, make sure that your cash register, not cash register, the scale.
In business, or it's just specifically...
So it really seems to be localized to weights and measures, but I'm willing to, you know, promise these people will make them be honest in business. But the question here is, I can understand, do all the mitzvahs and you get long life. Okay, that means you did them all. Like, why not? Kibbutz Avayim is described in the Gemara as being the supernatural mitzvah. Like, if you can do this, you're not human. Right? Kibbutz Avayim is so hard that that people just don't achieve that. The Gemara has all these stories about the mother threw the wallet into the sea, and yet he didn't say anything, or she embarrassed him in front of people, and they said, well, that's good. You're getting there in Kibbutz Avayim. It's the right conclusion, like Chav Tes Talam and Allah has all these stories that scare people because they just tell us you can't get there. So, right, I understand it's such a difficult mitzvah, so if you succeed, long life for you. I understand it for honest weights and measures because society needs commerce in which people trust each other. If people don't trust each other, then everything is going to fall apart. You need that. So I promise people long life for being honest with their weights and measures. But this... You know, this momentary mitzvah, which doesn't cost you anything, you just taste away the mother bird, this gets you long life is very strange. So Ramban's answer, which we saw in the last line of the Ramban at number 14, is yeah, but there's Kabbalah involved. This has a really big impact, inyan gadol, and therefore you get long life. I saw another idea from Rabbi Nissen Shulman, those who knew Rabbi Moshe Shulman, who was the rabbi of Shari Shemayim, so his father. He suggested that it's because small moments train you for big traits. A person who learns to be sensitive on many small occasions will develop a sensitivity in the big occasions as well. It's reminiscent of the Rambam, where the Rambam writes on the mission in the third parak in Pirkei Avos that if you have a choice between giving a very large gift of tzedakah once or giving 100 smaller gifts, give 100 smaller gifts. Because that will train you to the trait of generosity. Giving it once doesn't have the same impact on you as when you give many times. It may have an impact on the recipient. But the donor has to learn that trait of chesed, and therefore that's what the Rambam writes. You do many small tzedakah gifts. But I'd like to throw another idea, which is that I think small moments are actually what make up the substance of people's lives. And I wrote about this in the front page article for this week's Toronto Torah, so please look for Toronto Torah in your shul, or and you get it by email, so you already have it. What I stress there is Medrash Shmos Rabba, which says that Hashem picks Moshe because Moshe leads the sheep out into the wilderness. Not that story about the sheep that's running away, different Medrash. He leads the sheep away from other people's land, so they won't take from other people. Ditto with David HaMelech, that's why he is picked. Shaul, we find Shaul being selected to become the Melech at a time when he's looking for his father's lost donkeys, and he's worried about his father, and he's worried about the animals. The Medrash in Shmos Rabbah, which talks about Moshe and David specifically, says Hashem will not pick someone until he sees how they act in small situations. Not how they act in big dramatic moments. Did they run into the burning building and save somebody who was there? How did they act in the small moments? And I think the reason is because that's what makes up life. You know, you read the newspapers and you get fooled by the headlines into thinking that it's these big, big issues that are going on internationally that shape people's lives. But it's so not. Right? It's the interactions you have with human beings. It's the bus driver. It's the neighbor. It's your kids. Those are the interactions that actually shape a person's existence. And I think that's the message here, is to look at what is really just a small moment. And to have that sensitivity in that moment, I think, actually has great meaning for people's lives, and therefore earns Arichas Yamim. Yes, I know. You can ask, well, why this mitzvah and why not any other mitzvah? There are lots of mitzvahs involved in small occasions. I understand you can answer that question. And I'm going to go back to the Aruch HaShulchan in number 13, in which he says, yeah, don't worry about it. No, not the Kabbalah, Mari. When he says that granted the Torah's commentators gave several reasons, three various reasons, but it's only to offer logical ideas. It's not going to explain everything. But I got to do something. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Have a good Shabbos. And I